Good morning. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'll be reading today from the last chapter of biologist Fran Hammerstrom's book, Is She Coming Too? Memoirs of a Lady Hunter. The chapter is called Biography of a Dancing Ground, about the sharp-tailed grouse. Fran weaves into her short chapter the life history, habitat, and beauty of this dancing grouse, and I'm sure this bird will find its place in your heart. The charred stumps of the felled timber had ceased smoldering. Logging roads wound among the obliterated slashings. The country lay open, devastated and bare, but the first wheat growth was pushing up green shoots, the tiny beginning of immeasurable wealth to come. The first sharptails appeared in the autumn. No one knew where they came from, but the deep woods around the burn had not proven an insurmountable barrier. From some other open country, a flock came in, winging its way over the treetops and alighting on the burn. The green shoots of smartweeds and ragweed had made good growth on the new ashes. By autumn, seeds were abundant and the sharptails stayed. Just before sunrise on a frosty morning, a group of sharp-tailed cocks started gobbling and cooing near an oak stump, and the sounds increased in volume, as though each cock, by his gobbling, were urging the others on to gobble too. Suddenly, within the twinkling of an eye, one cock spread his wings, blew up his lavender air sacs, and started to dance. For the first time since the white man inhabited Wisconsin, a sharp-tail was dancing on this particular piece of ground. His feathered legs buzzing like a mechanical toy, and his feet beating a rapid tattoo, he danced and cooed. So still was the morning that the sound of his cooing resounded far over the open plain. As the sun rose, more cocks took up the dance. And so in the open plain by the oak stump, a dance ground was born. No longer did a pileated woodpecker drum on the old oak tree, nor flying squirrels glide in its shade. A new era in the ever-changing pattern of natural successions had begun, and the sharp-tailed grouse were among the first to take advantage of it. It was not till spring that the sharp-tails returned to dance on the spot by the oak stump. For sharptails, spring comes early. In February, weeks before the editor of the local paper was to print his news item about the first robin, the sharptail cocks gathered on the spot by the oak stump and fought their neighbors for possession of a part of it. So far, no hen had appeared. Early mornings and evenings, the cocks gathered and fought and danced and cooed until each had his own territory. There was a vehemence to their cooing, not like the gentle-sounding dove. They danced as though possessed, and feathers lay upon the ground, torn out in fights, but still no hen had come. It was on a morning in April that a new intensity came upon the dance ground. It was still so early that the tails of the dancing cocks gleamed like will-o'-the-wisps, white in the half-light. Demurely, the first hen walked the dancing ground. If she were aware of the tumultuous dancing cocks around her, she concealed it admirably. She walked slowly, occasionally pausing to peck at a blade of grass or an herb leaf, perhaps the avian equivalent of a yawn. Mornings, and sometimes in the evenings, the cocks came to dance, and as May approached more and more often, hens sought the dancing ground, and with each visit, the fervor of the dancing cocks increased. Gradually, one by one, an awareness seemed to come over the hens. They spread or flicked their wings in invitation as they walked among the dancing cocks. One and then others, each as she came to the point of readiness, was mounted. The nests in which they laid their eggs were mostly within a half a mile of the dancing ground, and some of the young cocks hatched from these first nests would try their first dancing steps not 4 months later. Year by year, the dance ground gained in numbers. Each spring, more cocks danced on the spot by the oak stump, and more dancing grounds became established over the plain. It got so that people who had settled near the big burn within the last year or two thought there'd always been sharptails there, and lots of them. They had never seen it when the woods were deep. They had only heard tell of the big woods. Now pin cherry and birches and aspen were growing up among the stumps, and here and there pines were coming in. Pin cherry, aspen, and birches gave winter budding. The new brushland offered the sharptails all they needed, and they throve. Food was abundant. Sweet fern, buds, catkins, berries, grasshoppers, and other insects for the young birds. Heavy grass near the willows and aspen gave good nesting and rearing cover. Most of the plain was open with bare grassy spots for loafing and dancing. Abundance lasted for years, and every spring on the dance ground by the oak stump, the cocks fought and danced and mated and fought again until the spring was over. Perhaps each spring they kept it up as long as there was the slightest hope that a hen might come. And then there were fewer sharptails. Some dancing grounds disappeared entirely, and others that once resounded with the stamping feet of 30 cocks now had but two or three. A jack pine seedling grew by the old stump and cast its shadow over the dance ground in the late afternoons. Shadows are not for sharptails, for they are birds of sunlight and brushland. The shadow was but a forerunner of what was to come. A blueberry picker dropped a lighted match. He spat casually but missed the small flame flickering in a grass tuft. His friend said, "Let her go. The berries need a burning." The picker looked up at the hot sun 3 hours high, faced the dry south wind, and kicked the dry ground with his boot. "No," he said, stamping the small flame. "She might get a roaring. No tell how far she'd burn." It was before the days of fire protection. Thus, with a few half-idle words, the future of the plain was settled for a generation to come. The plant succession was not to be turned back to open country once more. The forest was to grow, and the doom of the dancing ground by the oak stump and of others like it was sealed. Four cocks danced there the next spring. One hen demurely trod the dance ground at sunrise 2 days running. She never came again, though the four cocks fought and danced and hooted till the lupin buds showed blue and summer was on its way. People noticed the difference. One said, "I saw 10 deer in my rye field the other night, and there's partridge out in the plain." The plain? It was no longer a plain. It was a young forest. A new and different wealth had come. Young trees and deer and partridges were part of the new order, and snowshoes where the sprouts were thickest. "Funny thing the way the sharp tails went," said the berry picker. Some thought the foxes got them, and some said it was them white owls. The berry picker said he didn't know, and changing the subject to more familiar ground, he remarked, "The berries have been scarce for years now. Seems like they need a burn or something to keep the crops a-coming." Blueberry crops and sharp tails were both on their way out. That spring, one cock danced at the oak stump, picking a bare spot of sandy soil among the jack pines. He started early, long before the first robin was to arrive, and the sun lit up his purple air sacs, and his feathery tracks left dancing patterns in the snow. He never fought, for there was no sparring partner. Later, he kept the grass on the sandy soil stamped bare with his feet, dancing morning and night. No hen was to come, for the last hen was gone from the plain. He danced till his rump feathers were worn down to their shafts from the movement of his tail as he danced. And then when the lupin buds were full to bursting and showed blue, he danced no more. The music of the dance ground by the oak stump was stilled. And that was from Frances Hammerstrom's book, Is She Coming Too? Memoirs of a Lady Hunter. The chapter called Biography of a Dancing Ground. Preparing for this chapter today, I did quite a bit of reading and quizzing knowledgeable friends about two of our Wisconsin's four grouse species, the sharp-tailed grouse and the prairie chicken, both known for their marvelous mating dances, and I realized that I have a lot to learn. For one thing, I had never seen how stunningly beautiful the sharp-tailed grouse is, with their vivid purple air sacs on their necks, contrasting with bright yellow on their heads, do look at some images of sharp-tailed grouse, and I learned that sharp-tailed grouse are a bird of the barrens. They need the low-growing shrubs and grasses and the few trees of the savanna for bud browsing and nesting cover. And about the prairie chicken, because today they are still booming and dancing in the Buena Vista marsh grasslands in the central sands, I had assumed that prairie chickens were always the grouse of the vast sandy remnants of Glacial Lake, Wisconsin, which is true, but not by any means the complete picture. I learned that when Frederick Hammerstrom started studying the Nisida area's grouse populations over thousands of acres in the 1930s, the sharp-tailed grouse numbers were around three times that of the prairie chickens. Their historical ranges overlapped considerably. There's an account in one of Franz's books about a hybrid prairie chicken sharp-tail that would appear on the booming ground in the spring, confusing with its behavior and looks all observers except the seasoned scientists who knew its parentage. Today, Wisconsin's sharp-tail habitat has shrunk to barrens of the far northwest in areas managed with fire for their benefit. Crex Meadows State Wildlife Area and Namekagon Barrens State Natural Area are two important refuges for these birds. Efforts are being made to create corridors for them so they can move and breed with other isolated populations in their barrens habitats. There's been a recent moving of individual sharptails from areas where they're more abundant in Minnesota into our northwest barrens. In the Central Sands Buena Vista Marsh, the prairie chicken, a more prairie grassland-oriented bird, is also hanging on in fire-managed areas. You can reserve a spot in a blind to see and hear them dance and boom, but the waiting list is long, so plan to try for the following year to reserve a spot. Google UW Stevens Point and prairie chickens. I encourage you to look up the barrens habitats that are protected here in Wisconsin and learn about them. It's a vastly more complex topic than I can tackle. Excellent information is at the Wisconsin DNR website. Search for barrens and for these two grouse I've talked about today. I also recommend reading Frederick Hammerstrom's A Study of Wisconsin Prairie Chicken and Sharp-Tailed Grouse, published in the Wilson Bulletin, June of 1939. And please support the endangered species work that many agencies and private organizations are doing, if you possibly can. And they always need volunteers to help with land management, too. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.